not refined grains, has the longest longevity potential, as indicated by evaluating the China Project data together with hundreds of the smaller food consumption studies. But, of course, this is still educated speculation. Let's not argue whether it is all right to eat a little bit of animal foods or not, and thereby miss the point that cannot be contradicted or disagreed with. Whether you eat a vegetarian diet or include a small amount of animal foods, for optimal health, you must receive the majority of your calories from unrefined plant foods. It is the large quantity of unrefined plant foods that grants the greatest protection against developing serious disease. The breast and prostate cancer mystery unraveled. So much has been written about the causes of breast cancer. There are entire books devoted to the subject. Yet women are still confused. This section should not be skipped over by men. Men have mothers, daughters, sisters, and wives they must help protect, and the same factors that cause breast cancer cause prostate cancer. Men with a family history of breast cancer have an increased risk of prostate cancer, and women with a family history of prostate cancer have an increased risk of breast cancer. So there is a strong link between these two hormonally sensitive cancers. American women are now twice as likely to develop breast cancer as they were a century ago, and most of this increase has occurred in the past 50 years. In spite of all the fear and publicity, American women are still in the dark about what they can do to protect themselves, and researchers looking for a simple cause have met with frustration. The reason is that breast cancer, like most cancers, is multicausal. Considering a number of contributing factors simultaneously is essential to understand the rapid climb in the incidence of breast cancers in recent decades. We know much today about the causes of breast cancer. And the good news is that genetics plays a minor role and the diseases do not strike at random. The war against breast cancer can be won. Carcinogenesis, the process that leads to cancer, is believed to occur in a series of steps. Let's understand the factors involved in the development of this cancer. It is a multi-stage process that begins with precancerous cellular damage that gradually proceeds to more malignant changes. The first step is the development of cellular abnormalities, which eventually leads to cancer. This usually occurs during adolescence and soon after puberty. Remember that unhealthy childhood nutritional practices cause excessive sex hormone production and early pathologic changes in the breast tissue that set the stage for cancer many years later. We know that puberty at an earlier age is a significant marker of increased risk. And we know that there is overwhelming evidence that ovarian hormones play a crucial role at all stages in the development of breast cancer. It is common knowledge among physicians that the earlier a woman matures, as measured by the age of her first menstrual period, the higher her risk for breast cancer. Both early menarche, the onset of menstruation, and greater body weight are markers of increased risk of breast cancer. Women are not the only sex affected. The same increased risk as a result of early maturation is seen with both prostate cancer and testicular cancer. If we grow and mature more rapidly, we increase our cancer risk and age faster. We see the same thing in lab animals. If we feed them so they grow faster, they die younger. Ominously, the onset of menstruation has been occurring at a younger and younger age in Western societies during the past century. The average age in the United States is now about 12 years. According to the World Health Organization, the average age at which puberty began in 1840 was 17. During the time period that the age of menarche has decreased from 17 to about 12 in Western Europe and the United States, there has been a concomitant change in Western eating habits. There has been an increased consumption of fat, refined carbohydrates, cheese and meat, and a huge decrease in the consumption of complex carbohydrates such as starchy plants. Modern studies of girls on vegetarian diets characterized by more complex carbohydrates and no meat show a later age of menarche and, as one would expect, a significant reduction of acne as well. A greater consumption of animal foods leads to a higher level of hormones related to early reproductive function and growth. These hormonal abnormalities persist into adulthood. Uterine fibroids also develop from a diet deficient in fruits and vegetables and heavy in meat. As the consumption of meat increases and vegetation decreases, one's risk of fibroids increases proportionately. In other words, the stage is set by our poor dietary habits early in life. Breast and prostate cancer are strongly affected by our dietary practices when we are young. First, European and then American studies have indicated that the protein richness of one's diet is a more sensitive marker of early menarche than increased body weight. This conclusion is consistent with the data relating earlier menarche, with increased animal protein use in South African girls. Then, in the 1990s, when the data from the massive China Cornell Oxford project was dissected, we again saw the high correlation between breast cancer incidence and the consumption of animal products. In China, animal food consumption correlated well with early menarche and increasing levels of sex hormones. Serum testosterone levels had the best correlation with breast cancer, even better than estrogen. Of note is that increasing levels of testosterone significantly increase the risk of both breast cancer and prostate cancer. Testosterone rises as well with increasing levels of obesity, and being overweight is another consistent risk factor. What makes the data from the China Project so intriguing is that breast cancer incidence is so low in China compared with Western countries, and that animal food consumption is so much lower than in America. Even those consuming the most animal products in China consume less than half the amount Americans do. As animal food intake increased from about once a week in the lowest third to about four times a week in the highest third, breast cancer rates increased by 70%. Of note is that the only difference among the diets was the addition of meat in varying amounts. Consumption of fresh vegetables in all groups was about the same, offering little chance of confounding variables. There was a strong increase in the occurrence of breast cancer mortality with increasing animal product consumption. In this country, we consume an enormous amount of cheese. A record high increase in cheese consumption is alarming, a 182% increase in the past 30 years. Cheese has more saturated fat and more hormone-containing and promoting substances than any other food, and the incidence of our hormonally sensitive cancers has skyrocketed. In spite of studies that do not show an impressive association with small differences in fat consumption later in life, large changes early in life have huge repercussions. When we consider the diet consumed throughout our life, meat and dairy continue to be implicated as a strong causal factor in breast cancer. There is almost no breast cancer at all in populations that consume less than 10% of their calories from animal products. After reviewing many studies on this issue for the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, a group of prominent scientists concluded that the studies that failed to show the relationship between animal product consumption and breast cancer suffered from methodological problems. Unraveling the protein myth. We have been indoctrinated since early childhood to believe that animal protein is a nutrient to be held in high esteem. We have been brought up with the idea that foods are good for us if they help us grow bigger and faster. Nothing could be further from the truth. The public, as well as the media, are confused about this issue. They continue to associate the term better nutrition with earlier maturity and larger stature resulting from our greater consumption of animal protein and animal fats. These unfavorable trends are repeatedly reported as positive events. Earlier writers and nutritionists have mistakenly equated rapid growth with health. I believe an increased rate of growth is not a good thing. The slower a child grows, the slower he or she is aging. Slower growth, taking longer to reach maturity, is predictive of a longer life in animal studies. We are finding the same thing in humans. An unnaturally rapid growth and premature puberty are risk factors for cancers and other diseases later in life. Evidence continues to mount that these same factors leading to earlier maturity and excessive growth in childhood increase the occurrence of cancer in general, not just breast and prostate cancer. Excluding malnutrition or serious disease, the slower we grow and mature, the longer we live. The other side of the story is that it is not just the fat in animal foods that causes cancer and heart disease. Animal protein is also getting a bad rap by legitimate nutritional researchers and scientists in studies. Scientists have discovered a link between animal protein and cancer in both laboratory and human epidemiological studies, and reducing one's consumption of animal protein slows the aging process. Animal product consumption in general is proportionally associated with multiple types of cancer. A massive international study that amassed data from 59 different countries showed that men who ate the most meat, poultry, and dairy products were the most likely to die from prostate cancer, while those who ate the most unrefined plant foods and nuts were the least likely to succumb to this disease. Another study from Germany found colon cancer and rectal cancer decreased by about 50% in adult vegetarians. However, a significantly greater reduction of cancer and all-cause mortality, about a 75% reduction, was related to being on a vegetarian diet for more than 20 years. The degree of protection correlated well with number of years on a vegetarian diet. Other studies on vegetarian diet in different countries show almost the same thing. The causes start accumulating early. There is considerable evidence that exposure to certain outlawed chemicals, especially PCBs and DDT, may promote further pathologic changes. Women who have breast cancer have a higher concentration of these chemicals in their breast tissue than do women who do not have cancer. This has also been noted in Long Island, New York, where there is a particularly high rate of breast cancer. Researchers hypothesize that the increased exposure to these chemicals, still in our environment, is the result of eating coastal fish. Added to all of this is the exposure to trans fats and cancer-causing compounds that are released when meat, fish, or fowl is grilled, fried, or barbecued. Clearly, cancer causation is a complicated, multifactorial issue. Cancers associated with increased consumption of animal products. Bladder cancer, brain cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, endometrial cancer, intestinal cancer, kidney cancer, leukemia, lung cancer, lymphoma, oropharyngeal cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, skin cancer, and stomach cancer. Exercise powerfully reduces cancer risk. Researchers at the University of Tromsø in Norway report that women who exercise regularly reduce their risk of developing breast cancer substantially. Their study involved more than 25,000 women ages 20 to 54 at the time of their entry into the study. The researchers found that younger, premenopausal women under 45 years old who exercise regularly had 62% less risk than sedentary women. The risk reduction was highest for lean women who exercised more than 4 hours per week. These women had a 72% reduction in risk. Diet and exercise have a much more important role to play in cancer prevention than mammograms and other detection methods. Keep in mind that mammograms merely detect, not prevent, cancer. They show disease only after the cancerous cells have been proliferating for many years. By that time, the majority of cancers have already spread from their local site, and surgically removing the tumor is not curative. Only a minority of women who have their breast cancers detected by a mammogram have their survival increased because of the earlier detection. The majority would have done just as well to find it later. I'm not aiming to discourage women ages 55 to 65 from having mammograms. Rather, my message is that this alone is insufficient. Mammograms, which do nothing to prevent breast cancer, are heavily publicized, while women hear nothing else about what they can do to prevent and protect themselves against breast cancer in the first place. Do not underestimate the effect of a superior diet on gradually removing and repairing damage caused by years of self-abuse. Do not be discouraged just because you cannot bring your risk down to zero because of your mistakes in the past. The same thing could be said for cigarette smokers. Should they not quit smoking merely because their risk of lung cancer can't be brought down to zero when they quit? Actually, lung cancer rates are considerably lower, about one-fifth, in countries that have a high vegetable consumption, even though they may smoke like crazy. Raw fruits and vegetables offer powerful protection. Leafy greens are the most protective. My main point is that our population has been ignoring those interventions that can most effectively save lives. We search for more answers because the ones we have found are not to our liking. Our most powerful artillery on the war against breast cancer and cancer in general is to follow the overall advice presented in this book and begin at as young an age as possible. Increasing the survival of cancer patients. It would be difficult for anyone to disagree that superior nutrition has a protective effect against cancer. The question that remains is this: can optimal nutrition or nutritional intervention be an effective therapeutic approach for patients who already have cancer? Can the diet you eat make a difference if you have cancer? Scientific data indicates that the answer is yes. Researchers looking for answers to these questions studied women with cancer and found that saturated fat in the diet promoted a more rapid spread of the cancer. Other researchers found similar results. For a woman who already has cancer, her risk of dying increased 40% for every 1,000 grams of fat consumed monthly. Studies also indicate that high fruit and vegetable intake improves survival, and fat on the body increases the risk of a premature death. Similar findings are found in the scientific literature regarding prostate cancer and diet, indicating that diet has a powerful effect on survival for those with prostate cancer. For humans, too much processed food and too many animal products are toxic. When it is consumed in significant volume, animal protein, not only animal fat, is earning a reputation as a toxic nutrient to humans. More books are touting the benefits of high-protein diets for weight loss and are getting much publicity. Many Americans wish to protect their addiction to high-fat, nutrient-inadequate animal foods. These consumers form a huge market for such topsy-turvy scientific-sounding quackery. Today, the link between animal products and many different diseases is as strongly supported in the scientific literature as the link between cigarette smoking and lung cancer. For example, subjects who ate meat, including poultry and fish, were found to be twice as likely to develop dementia, loss of intellectual function with aging, as their vegetarian counterparts in a carefully designed study. The discrepancy was further widened when past meat consumption was taken into account. The same diet, loaded with animal products, that causes heart disease and cancer also causes most every other disease prevalent in America, including kidney stones, renal insufficiency and renal failure, osteoporosis, uterine fibroids, hypertension, appendicitis, diverticulosis, and thrombosis. Are dairy foods protecting us from osteoporosis? Dairy products are held in high esteem in America. Most people consider a diet without dairy unhealthy. Without dairy foods, how could we obtain sufficient calcium for our bones? Let's examine this accepted wisdom. Is it true, or have we been brainwashed by years and years of misinformation and advertising? Hip fractures and osteoporosis are more frequent in populations in which dairy products are commonly consumed and calcium intakes are commonly high. For example, American women drink 30 to 32 times as much cow's milk as the New Guineans, yet suffer 47 times as many broken hips. A multi-country analysis of hip fracture incidence and dairy product consumption found that milk consumption has a high statistical association with higher rates of hip fractures. Does this suggest that drinking cow's milk causes osteoporosis? Certainly, it brings into question the continual advertising message from the National Dairy Council that drinking cow's milk prevents osteoporosis. The major finding from the Nurses' Health Study, which included 121,701 women ages 30 to 55 at enrollment in 1976, was that the data does not support the hypothesis that the consumption of milk protects against hip or forearm fractures. In fact, those who drank 3 or more servings of milk a day had a slightly higher rate of fractures than women who drank little or no milk. This does not mean that dairy causes osteoporosis. However, it does suggest that dairy products are not protecting us from osteoporosis as we have been indoctrinated to believe since childhood. On the contrary, studies show fruits and vegetables are protective against osteoporosis. Osteoporosis has a complex etiology that involves other factors such as dietary acid-alkaline balance, trace minerals, phytochemicals in plants, exercise, exposure to sunlight, and more. Dr. Campbell, head of nutritional research for the China Project, reported, quote, "Ironically, osteoporosis tends to occur in countries where calcium intake is highest, and most of it comes from protein-rich dairy products. The Chinese data indicate that people need less calcium than we think and can get adequate amounts from vegetable-source plant food," end quote. He told the New York Times that there was basically no osteoporosis in China, yet the calcium intake ranged from 241 to 943 milligrams per day, for an average of 544. The comparable U.S. calcium intake is 841 to 1,435 milligrams per day, an average of 1,143 milligrams per day. Mostly from dairy sources, and of course, osteoporosis is a major public health problem here. To understand the causes of osteoporosis, one must comprehend the concept of negative calcium balance. Let's say you consume about 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. About a third of the calcium ingested gets absorbed. So if you absorb about 300 milligrams, the remaining 700 milligrams remains in the digestive tract and passes out with your stool. If, in the same 24-hour period, you excreted 350 milligrams of calcium in your urine, would you be in a negative or positive calcium balance? A negative calcium balance means more calcium is excreted in the urine than is absorbed through digestion. A positive calcium balance means more calcium is absorbed than excreted. A negative balance over time results in bone loss, as the additional calcium must come from our primary calcium storehouse, our bones. Epidemiologic studies have linked osteoporosis not to low calcium intake, but to various nutritional factors that cause excessive calcium loss in the urine. The continual depletion of our calcium reserves over time from excessive calcium excretion in the urine is the primary cause of osteoporosis. Now let us consider the factors that contribute to this excessive urinary calcium excretion. Dietary factors that induce calcium loss in the urine. Animal protein, salt, caffeine, refined sugar, alcohol, nicotine, aluminum-containing antacids, drugs such as antibiotics, steroids, thyroid hormone, and vitamin A supplements. Published data clearly links increased urinary excretion of calcium with animal protein intake, but not with vegetable protein intake. Plant foods, though some may be high in protein, are not acid-forming. Animal protein ingestion results in a heavy acid load in the blood. This sets off a series of reactions whereby calcium is released from the bones to help neutralize the acid. The sulfur-based amino acids in animal products contribute significantly to urinary acid production and the resulting calcium loss. The Nurses' Health Study found that women who consumed 95 grams of protein a day had a 22% greater risk of forearm fracture than those who consumed less than 68 grams. The most comprehensive epidemiological survey involving hip fractures and food was done in 1992. The authors sought out every peer-reviewed geographical report ever done on hip fracture incidents. They located 34 published studies of women in 16 countries. Their analysis showed that diets high in animal protein had the highest correlation with hip fracture rates, with an 81% correlation between eating animal protein and fractures. The extra calcium contained in dairy foods simply cannot counteract the powerful effect of all the factors listed in the table above. The average American diet is not only high in protein, but high in salt, sugar, and caffeine, and low in fruits and vegetables. Fruits and vegetables can help buffer the acid load from all the animal protein and reduce calcium loss. So we need to consume a lot more calcium to make up for the powerful combination of factors that induce calcium loss in the urine. The accompanying chart compares the grams of animal protein consumed per day and hip fracture rates for 16 countries from around the world. The chart makes clear that hip fracture rates rise with the amount of animal protein consumed. This direct relationship is clearly seen looking at countries with a very low incidence of hip fracture, whose populations consume less than 20 grams of animal protein per day, versus a 25-fold increase in hip fracture for those that consume 50 grams or more animal protein per day. To view the entire list, please visit drfurman.com/ETL graphics. Some researchers believe it is possible to compensate for our high protein intake just by consuming more calcium. This might be the case if the only thing we did to excess was consume a little too much animal protein, but in the context of everything else we do wrong in the American diet and lifestyle, it just doesn't fly. Drinking more milk is simply not protective. Taking extra calcium supplements may help trim the calcium loss a little and slow the rate of bone loss, but not enough. We need to reduce the other causes too. We even add vitamin A to milk, and many women take vitamin A supplements, which contributes to more calcium loss. All these factors help explain why calcium intake does not correlate well with reduced hip fracture rates around the globe. The Eskimos are a perfect example. They consume a huge amount of calcium, over 2,000 milligrams a day, from all the soft fish bones they eat. Yet they have the highest hip fracture rate in the world because they consume so much animal protein from fish. The best food for bones, fruit and vegetables. Green vegetables, beans, tofu, sesame seeds, and even oranges contain lots of usable calcium without the problems associated with dairy. Keep in mind that you retain the calcium better and just do not need as much when you don't consume a diet heavy in animal products and sodium, sugar, and caffeine. Many green vegetables have calcium absorption rates of over 50%, compared with about 32% for milk. Additionally, since animal protein induces calcium excretion in the urine, the calcium retention from vegetables is higher. All green vegetables are high in calcium. The American chicken and pasta diet style is significantly low in calcium, so adding dairy as a calcium source to this mineral-poor diet makes superficial sense. It is certainly better than no calcium in the diet. However, much more than just calcium is missing. The only reason cow's milk is considered such an important source of calcium is that the American diet is centered on animal foods, refined grains, and sugar, all of which are devoid of calcium. Any healthy diet containing a reasonable amount of unrefined plant foods will have sufficient calcium without milk. Fruits and vegetables strengthen bones. Researchers have found that those who eat the most fruits and vegetables have denser bones. These researchers concluded that not only are fruits and vegetables rich in potassium, magnesium, calcium, and other nutrients essential for bone health, but because they are alkaline, not acid-producing, they do not induce urinary calcium loss. Green vegetables in particular have a powerful effect on reducing hip fractures, for they are rich not only in calcium, but in other nutrients, such as vitamin K, which is crucial for bone health. Deadly vitamin D levels. Numerous studies have shown that most Americans are severely vitamin D deficient, a condition that causes osteoporosis, as well as increased heart disease, cancer, and autoimmune disease. Vitamin D helps maintain healthy levels of calcium in the blood, ensuring that calcium is always available to the body's tissues. It increases calcium absorption in the small intestine, decreases calcium excretion in the urine and facilitates the release of calcium from bones. A deficiency of vitamin D can cause increased demineralization of bone, leading to weak and soft bones. Strong evidence indicates that 3 of 4 Americans would benefit from vitamin D supplementation with respect to fracture and fall prevention, and possibly other public health targets, such as cardiovascular health, diabetes, and cancer. The optimal range for vitamin D seems to be between 35 and 50 nanograms per milliliter. Almost 80% of Americans are below this level. Approximately 50% of Americans have a vitamin D level below 20 nanograms per milliliter, which is dangerously low. For the past 15 years, I've been telling people to track their blood levels of vitamin D and to take vitamin D supplements. These recommendations have recently been corroborated by the Food and Nutrition Board of the Institute of Medicine and the American Academy of Pediatrics. Medical research studies that demonstrate the effectiveness of vitamin D supplements on reducing the risk of bone fractures and cancers depend on doses significantly higher than the standard recommended daily dose of 400 international units, or IUs. Most people need to take more than 1,000 international units of supplemental vitamin D to achieve adequate blood levels and to get substantial protection against osteoporosis, as well as life-threatening diseases such as cancer and heart disease. Some may need to take even higher doses, initially, to reestablish optimal blood levels. Vitamin D is found naturally in very few foods. The primary sources are the sun, fortified dairy products, mushrooms, and supplements. I do not recommend consumption of dairy products, and sun exposure places you at unnecessary risk of skin cancer and wrinkling and aging of your skin. Regardless of the increased risk of skin damage, adequate sunshine is simply not available to our population of indoor workers living in northern latitudes. Taking a daily supplement is your best choice for establishing and maintaining optimal levels of vitamin D. Got milk or leave it? Dairy is best kept to a minimum. There are many good reasons to consume dairy. For example, there is a strong association between dairy lactose and ischemic heart disease. There is also a clear association between high-growth promoting foods, such as dairy products, and cancer. There is a clear association between milk consumption and bladder, prostate, colorectal, and testicular cancers. Dairy fat is also loaded with various toxins and is the primary source of our nation's high exposure to dioxin. Dioxin is a highly toxic chemical compound that even the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, admits is a prominent cause of many types of cancer in those consuming dairy fat, such as butter and cheese. Cheese is also a powerful inducer of acid load, which increases calcium loss further. Considering that cheese and butter are the foods with the highest saturated fat content and the major source of our dioxin exposure, cheese is a particularly foolish choice for obtaining calcium. Cow's milk is designed to be the perfect food for the rapidly growing calf, but as mentioned above, foods that promote rapid growth promote cancer. There is ample evidence implicating dairy consumption as a causative factor in both prostate and ovarian cancer. In April 2000, the Physicians Health Study reported that having 2.5 servings of dairy each day boosted prostate cancer risk by more than 30%. Another controlled study conducted in Greece has shown a strong association between dairy products and prostate cancer. By analyzing the data, the authors calculated that if the population of Greece were to increase its consumption of tomatoes and decrease its consumption of dairy products, prostate cancer incidence could be reduced by 41%, and an even greater reduction would be possible in America, where the dietary risk is even higher. Other studies have found that prostate cancer risk was elevated with increased consumption of low-fat milk, suggesting that the potential threat to prostate health may be correlated more to dairy protein than dairy fat. Dairy protein boosts the amount of IGF-1 in the blood. IGF-1 is found in cow's milk and has been shown to occur in increased levels in the blood of individuals consuming dairy products on a regular basis. IGF-1 is known to stimulate the growth of both normal and cancer cells. Case-control studies in diverse populations have shown a strong and consistent association between serum IGF-1 concentrations and prostate cancer risk. One study showed that men who had the highest levels of IGF-1 had more than 4 times the risk of prostate cancer compared with those who had the lowest levels. Investigating the link between lactose, or milk sugar, and ovarian cancer among the 80,326 women enrolled in the Nurses' Health Study, Dr. Kathleen Fairfield and her associates reported that women who consumed the highest amount of lactose, 1 or more servings of dairy per day, had a 44% greater risk for all types of invasive ovarian cancer than those who ate the lowest amount, 3 or fewer servings monthly. Skim and low-fat milk were the largest contributors to lactose consumption. Dairy products are just not the healthiest source of calcium. Perhaps the strongest argument against dairy products in our diet, lots of us are lactose intolerant. Those lactose intolerant folks who don't digest dairy well are continually barraged with information that makes them believe they will lose their bones if they don't consume dairy products in some way. They may be better off without it. If you choose to consume dairy, minimize your intake to small amounts. Remember the 90% rule. Eat 90% health-giving whole plant foods. Dairy may be a part of that 10%. However, it is not essential for good health and carries potential health risks. You do not need dairy products to get sufficient calcium if you eat a healthy diet. All unprocessed natural foods are calcium-rich. Even a whole orange, not orange juice, has about 60 milligrams of calcium. The accompanying chart lists the calcium content found in 100 calories of 18 foods, including steak, milk, eggs, pork, fish, and various plant foods. Bok choy and turnips top the list and have over 3 times the amount of calcium than milk and roughly 200 times more calcium than pork or steak. To view the complete list, visit drfurman.com/ETL graphics. Government health authorities advise us to consume 1,500 milligrams of calcium daily. This is a tremendous amount of calcium. So much is recommended because of all the factors mentioned above. Even this high level of calcium will not prevent osteoporosis, but in a population with so many factors that cause osteoporosis, the extra calcium will make the negative balance less negative and partially slow the rate of osteoporosis. However, the only way to prevent osteoporosis and have strong bones is to exercise and to stop the causes of high urinary calcium excretion. Eat to Live describes a diet that protects you against osteoporosis. Chapter 5. Nutritional Wisdom Makes You Thin. Case Study. Can you imagine losing 333 pounds? Scott realized that bariatric surgery was not a solution for him and, after much research, embraced Dr. Furman's Eat to Live diet. Quote, "Starting in puberty, I put on weight. Even though I was a competitive swimmer, rode my bike everywhere, and played pickup games of football and baseball, I still packed on the pounds. Eventually, I got married and became a stay-at-home dad, which was a privilege, but also very isolating and lonely. My weight increased dramatically, yet I denied the seriousness of the problem. One day, I woke up and admitted that I had fallen directly into a huge black pit. In November 2005, I weighed 501 pounds. I was unable to walk more than a few feet. My knees, lower back, and feet suffered greatly, causing my independence of movement to be completely gone. My wife, who was a nurse, had to help me shower, dress, walk, etc., and consequently, I had no self-esteem. She also noticed that I had developed serious sleep apnea. Life was intolerable. Weighing as much as I did, I couldn't move without a lot of pain and exhaustion. I stepped outside my house at the most 4 to 6 times a year. I went to 3 different surgeons for bariatric surgery consultations, but couldn't and wouldn't commit to it. It seemed as though I would be handing my problem over to someone else to fix. This was my problem, and I had to solve it or live with the negative consequences. I chose to solve it. I discovered Eat to Live and decided to commit to it. After years of trying fad diets to lose weight, I was no longer interested in the D word. Eat to Live was not about a goal weight. It was about doing what was healthy for my body. I thought the results would follow, and they did. By February of 2009, I had lost 333 pounds and had my health and my life back. I went from 501 pounds to 168 pounds. My cholesterol went from 170 to 65. My blood pressure went from 126 over 72 to 109 over 65. My resting heart rate went from 88 to 50. My body fat went from 62% to 10%. I started exercising again. For me, biking made complete sense, and it was a way to move around without further destroying what was left of my body. It also reconnected me with all the best parts of my childhood, that sense of adventure and freedom. It was, is, and always will be great for me. That first year, I rode approximately 1,400 miles. Last year, I rode 19,700 miles, and this year, I'm shooting for 25,000. Now, as a family, we do almost all our errands on our bikes. Anywhere we used to go by car, we now take a bike. When I was morbidly obese, I felt worthless, unclean, stupid, unacceptable, and rejected. Eat to Live gave me a new life. Physically, I feel great. My wife even admits that she can't keep up with me now. Make a sacred pact to commit to this new lifestyle. Do it at any and all costs. This is the only way out. End quote. Now that we've cleared up some popular misconceptions about nutrition, we can go on to analyze food components. After reading this chapter, you will understand how eating lots of nutrient-dense foods will make you lose weight. Unrefined carbohydrates encourage weight loss. Our bodies need carbohydrates more than any other substance. Our muscle cells and brains are designed to run on carbohydrates. Carbohydrate-rich foods, when consumed in their natural state, are low in calories and high in fiber compared with fatty foods, processed foods, or animal products. Fat contains about 9 calories per gram, but protein and carbohydrates contain approximately 4 calories per gram. So when you eat high carbohydrate foods, such as fresh fruits and beans, you can eat more food and still keep your caloric intake relatively low. The high fiber content of unrefined carbohydrate-rich foods is another crucial reason you will feel more satisfied and not crave more food when you make unrefined carbohydrates the main source of calories in your diet. It is usually the small amount of added refined fat or oils that makes natural carbohydrates so fattening. For example, 1 cup of mashed potatoes is only 130 calories. Put just 1 tablespoon of butter on top and you have added another 100 calories. Protein, fat, and carbohydrates are called macronutrients. Vitamins and minerals are referred to as micronutrients. All plant foods are a mixture of protein, fat, and carbohydrate, the macronutrients. Even a banana contains about 3.5% protein, almost the same as mother's milk. Fruit and starchy vegetables, such as sweet potatoes, corn, and butternut squash, are predominantly carbohydrate, but also contain some fat and protein. Green vegetables are about half protein, a quarter carbohydrate, and a quarter fat. Legumes and beans are about half carbohydrate, a quarter protein, and a quarter fat. One of the principles behind the health and weight loss formula in this book is not to be overly concerned about the macronutrient balance. If you eat healthful foods, you will automatically get enough of all 3 macronutrients as long as you do not consume too many calories from white flour, sugar, and oil. So don't fear eating foods rich in carbohydrate, and don't be afraid of eating fruit because it contains sugar. Even the plant foods that are high in carbohydrate contain sufficient fiber and nutrients, and are low enough in calories to be considered nutritious. As long as they are unrefined, they should not be excluded from your diet. In fact, it is impossible to glean all the nutrients needed for optimal health if your diet does not contain lots of carbohydrate-rich food. Fresh fruits, beans, and legumes whole grains, and root vegetables are all examples of foods whose calories come mainly from carbohydrate. It is the nutrient per calorie ratio of these foods that determines their food value. There is nothing wrong with carbohydrates. It is the empty calorie or refined carbohydrates that are responsible for the bad reputation of carbs. Understanding the concept of caloric density. Because meats, dairy, and oils are so dense in calories, it is practically impossible for us to eat them without consuming an excess of calories. These calorie-rich foods can pile up a huge number of calories way before our stomachs are full and our hunger satisfied. However, eating foods higher in nutrients and fiber and lower in calories allows us to become satiated without consuming excess calories. When subjects eating foods low in caloric density, such as fruits and vegetables, were compared with those consuming foods richer in calories, those on meal plans with higher calorie concentrations were found to consume twice as many calories per day in order to satisfy their hunger. Your body must burn about 23% of the calories consumed from carbohydrates to make the conversion from glucose into fat, but it converts food into body fat quickly and easily. 100 calories of ingested fat can be converted to 97 calories of body fat, burning a measly 3 calories. When you consume oil or animal fat, the fat you eat is easily and rapidly stored by the body. Converting food fat into body fat is easy. The process doesn't even modify the molecules. Research scientists can actually take fat biopsies off your hips or waist and tell you where it came from: pig fat, dairy fat, chicken fat, or olive oil. The fat is still the same as it was on your plate, but now it is under your skin. The saying, "from your lips to your hips," is literally true. Fat is also an appetite stimulant. The more you eat, the more you want. Foods that make you thin. Appetite is not controlled by the weight of the food, but by fiber, nutrient density, and caloric density. It is even useful to approximate the amount of calories per volume. Since the stomach can hold about 1 liter of food, let's look at how many calories are in a whole stomachful of a particular food. It's pretty clear which foods will let you feel full with the least amount of calories: fruits and vegetables. Green vegetables, fresh fruits, and legumes again take the gold, silver, and bronze medals. Nothing else in the field is even close. Green vegetables are so incredibly low in calories and rich in nutrients and fiber that the more of them you eat, the more weight you will lose. One of my secrets to nutritional excellence and superior health is the 1 pound, 1 pound rule. That is, try to eat at least 1 pound of raw vegetables a day and 1 pound of cooked, steamed, or frozen green or non-green, nutrient-rich vegetables a day as well. 1 pound raw and 1 pound cooked. Keep this goal in mind as you design and eat every meal. This may be too ambitious a goal for some of us to reach, but by working toward it, you will ensure the dietary balance and results you want. The more vegetables you eat, the more weight you will lose. The high volume of greens not only will be your secret to a thin waistline, but will simultaneously protect you against life-threatening illnesses. The accompanying chart shows the amounts of calories per pound and per liter for 13 commonly consumed foods. It also lists the amount of fiber in grams per pound. Processed oils top the list with a whopping 3,900 calories per pound and 7,700 calories per liter. Not surprisingly, animal products and dairy, such as meat and cheese, are also near the top of the list with 2,000 and 1,600 calories per pound, respectively. Beans, fruits, and green vegetables are the lowest in calories by weight and volume, and are the only fiber-containing foods. Please view the chart in its entirety at drfurman.com/ETL graphics. The nutrient density line. The nutrient density scores below are based on identified phytochemicals, antioxidant activity, and total vitamins and mineral content. Here, the highest nutrient density has a score of 100 points, the lowest nutrient density score of 0. At 100 points, dark green leafy vegetables including kale, mustard greens, collard greens, Swiss chard, watercress, spinach, arugula. At 95 points nutrient density, other green vegetables including romaine, bok choy, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, broccoli, string beans, snow peas, green peas. Non-green nutrient-rich vegetables, score of 50, include beets, eggplant, mushrooms, onions, radishes, bean sprouts, red and yellow bell peppers, radicchio, cauliflower, tomatoes, artichokes, and raw carrots. Fresh fruits have a score of 45 on the nutrient density scale, including strawberries, blueberries, other berries, plums, oranges, melons, kiwi fruit, apples, cherries, pineapple, peaches, pears, grapes, bananas. Beans, a score of 40, including lentils, kidney, Great Northern, adzuki, black, pinto, split peas, edamame, chickpeas. Raw nuts and seeds, a score of 30, including sunflower, pumpkin, sesame, flax seeds, almonds, cashews, pistachios, walnuts, pecans, and hazelnuts. A score of 25 for colorful, starchy vegetables, including butternut and other squash, sweet potatoes, corn, turnips. Whole grains and white potatoes, including old-fashioned oats, barley, brown, and wild rice, buckwheat, millet, quinoa, bulgur, whole grain bread, white potatoes, a score of 20. Fish, score of 18. Fat-free dairy, 15. Eggs, 15. Wild meat and fowl, 15. Full-fat dairy, a score of 8. Red meat, 6. Refined grain products, 6. Cheese, 3. Refined oils, 1. And finally, with no nutritive value, refined sweets, including cookies, cakes, candy, soda. One of the most fascinating areas of research in recent years has been related to the therapeutic value of cruciferous vegetables, which include vegetables in the cabbage family and others such as kale, collards, watercress, arugula, cauliflower, and bok choy. Cruciferous vegetables have the most powerful anti-cancer effects of all foods. Most of the phytonutrients function as antioxidants in your body, meaning they neutralize free radicals, rendering them harmless and reducing cancer risk. The phytonutrients in cruciferous vegetables also activate your body's own antioxidant control system. These unique compounds cycle through the body for 3 to 5 days after consumption, offering protection and fueling numerous bodily systems, enabling them to function more effectively. Vegetables have powerful levels of carotenoids and other nutrients that prevent age-related diseases. For example, the leading cause of age-related blindness in America is macular degeneration. Low carotenoid levels in the macula are now considered a risk factor for macular degeneration. If you eat greens at least 5 times per week, your risk drops by more than 86%. Lutein and zeaxanthin are carotenoids with powerful disease prevention properties. Researchers have found that those with the highest blood levels of lutein had the healthiest blood vessels, with little or no atherosclerosis. The accompanying list shows the amounts of the phytochemical lutein and or zeaxanthin contained in 9 different plant foods. They range from over 28,000 micrograms in 1 cup of cooked kale to over 12,000 micrograms in a 4-cup serving of romaine lettuce. To view the complete list, please visit drfurman.com/ETL graphics. Nutrient weight ratios are misleading. William Harris, MD, performed an analysis of major food groups titled Less Grains, More Greens, though he didn't assign phytochemical activity. Dr. Harris explains in detail why ranking and analyzing foods by nutrient weight ratios, the nutritional establishment's usual method, is ill-advised and misleading. People do not eat until a certain weight of food is consumed, but rather until they are calorically and nutritively filled. He compares an analysis of spinach with that of spinach with water added, spinach soup, and shows how the weight, added water, does not change the nutrients received. If we analyze the nutrients by weight, we incorrectly think that spinach with water added is much less nutritious. Furthermore, Harris explains why the food industry, especially the producers of animal products, is opposed to nutrient calorie analysis. It is because nutrient per weight sorting hides how deficient animal foods are in nutrients, especially the crucial anti-cancer nutrients. As Dr. Harris states, nutrient per weight sorting is, quote, a great way to keep excess calories, cholesterol, and saturated fat in the diet, which is a splendid way to grow an arteriosclerotic, obese, cancer-ridden nation, which is what we have, end quote. Eating to enhance the nutrient per calorie density of one's diet. Causes weight loss that is permanent. Promotes longevity. Derails hunger and food cravings. Increases immune function and disease resistance. Has therapeutic effects to reverse disease. Protects against heart disease, stroke, and dementia. Fuels cellular repair mechanisms, protecting against cancer. Fats are essential. It is true that most of us eat too much fat, but scientific research is revealing that too little fat can be a problem too. We have learned that not merely are we consuming too much fat, but, more important, we are consuming the wrong fats. Americans consume too much of some bad fats and not enough of other fats that we need to maximize health. Essential fatty acids, or EFAs, are polyunsaturated dietary fats that the body cannot manufacture, so they are required for health. EFAs are important for the structure and function of cell membranes and serve as precursors to hormones, which play an important role in our health. These fats are essential not only in growth and development, but also in the prevention and treatment of chronic diseases. The two primary essential fatty acids are linoleic acid, an omega-6 fat, and alpha-linolenic acid, an omega-3 fat. The body can make other fatty acids called non-essential fats from these two basic fats. Linoleic acid's first double bond is at the location of its sixth carbon, so it is called an omega-6 fatty acid, and alpha-linolenic acid's first double bond is on its third carbon, so it is called an omega-3 fatty acid. Optimal health depends on the proper balance of fatty acids in the diet. The modern diet that most of us eat supplies an excessive amount of omega-6 fat, but often too little omega-3 fat. This relative deficiency of omega-3 fat has potentially serious implications. Also, the consumption of too much omega-6 fat leads to high levels of arachidonic acid. Higher levels of arachidonic acid can promote inflammation. When we have insufficient omega-3 fat, we do not produce enough DHA, a long-chain omega-3 fat with anti-inflammatory effects. High levels of arachidonic acid and low levels of omega-3 fat can be a contributory cause of heart disease, stroke, autoimmune disease, skin diseases, depression, and possibly increased cancer incidence. Most Americans would improve their health if they consumed more omega-3 fat and less omega-6 fat. I recommend that both vegetarians and non-vegetarians make an effort to consume 1 to 2 grams of omega-3 fat daily. Great sources of omega-3 fat include flax seeds, walnuts, soybeans, green, frozen, or raw, and tofu. A diet very high in omega-6 fat makes matters worse. Your body makes even less DHA fat. We need enough DHA fat to ensure optimum health. The high level of omega-6 fat competes for the enzymes involved in fatty acid desaturation, or conversion to longer chain fats, and interferes with the conversion of alpha-linolenic acid, omega-3, to EPA and DHA. Therefore, our high fat intake contributes to our DHA fat deficiency. Our modern diet, full of vegetable oils and animal products, is very high in omega-6 fat and very low in omega-3 fat, The higher the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, the higher